This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Will Hardy is the head coach of the Utah Jazz, longtime Spurs assistant, former Celtics assistant, and best I can tell, owner of one of the weirdest Wikipedia photos that I've seen in a while. I don't know how often, Will, you check your Wikipedia page, but the phrase hostage photo comes to mind when I pull it up. Have you seen it before?
I actually have. One of the very, I guess, humorous parts of now being in the position that I'm in is that my friends from growing up take great joy in either comments about me on Twitter or photos that come up. And so I actually have seen the Wikipedia photo, and I know what it's from. It's from this like interview that they did with the assistants in Boston. I guess that video was paused at a very odd time because I do look like I'm in great distress. That is true.
It was from your year in Boston. You were back there as part of the Ime Udoka staff for one season. Did that feel at all like a homecoming for you? You weren't raised in Massachusetts, but you did go to school, you know, northern Massachusetts. Did that feel familiar going back to the New England area?
Yeah, it was actually very nostalgic in that way, like being around Boston, not just the people, but the weather, having to be back in New England for the four seasons of, you know, life in Massachusetts was very, very odd after being in Texas for 11 years, where really there's two seasons, there's summer and there's not summer. So it was cool to be back in the area for that part. And then also like having gone to school in New England, a ton of my friends from school were huge Celtics fans, huge Pats fans, Sox fans. So to get kind of back into that environment around those fans was really cool as well. Was fortunate to actually get to go to Pats game, went to a couple Sox games as well. So like, obviously I have some friends still there from college. So a lot of really good memories kind of got stirred up. It was great to be in New England. You know, obviously my wife and I had planned on being there longer than we were. Like when we made the move from San Antonio, you know, to go to Boston, to join Ime, like it was definitely something that we were like excited about, you know, big change for our family, but the Celtics organization is amazing and the fans there are incredible. Like there's really nothing like playing in New England.
And then you get that season, which, I mean, if you were not in the position you're in, you should write a book about that season. Like I just remember being on TV for the first 2 months, like after every game, and like having to clobber the team for how some kind of screw up, some kind of way that they played poorly. Those first 2 months, like, I mean, when you, I guess it's hard to encapsulate the entire season, but when you look back at the roller coaster ride that it was, like, what stands out to you?
I think the biggest thing to me is that things can always change. Like, there's always a preconceived notion of who a team is when the season starts, or before the season starts. And then once you get going, you know, people are pretty quick to kind of, you know, put a team in stone of like, oh, this is who they are this year. Like, here's the four contenders. Here's five teams that are tanking. And here's eight teams that they don't know what they're doing. They're not losing enough, or they're not, you know, there's like very quickly people are able to like put teams in these categories. And so the beginning of the year was really hard. We had some injuries. COVID obviously was still going on. It's a new staff. With a team that had some expectation, right? Like there's a lot of great players on the Celtics already when we get there. And we seemed like we were finding ways to lose games early in the year. Like it was almost like damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like every time we tried something, it just seemed like we couldn't quite get it to click. And internally, we didn't have much panic because we knew the buy-in from the guys. Like we knew what it felt like every day in our gym. But when you're playing in Boston, like you've got the media, you've got the fans, like expectations are always really high. And so there was definitely a lot of noise. But, you know, all of a sudden we got some good health and we got some good play and things really started to click on both ends of the floor, like how we wanted to play. And the players were more familiar with the staff. The staff was more familiar with the players. Like, I think we figured out them just like they were figuring out us, like what to do with them, how best to use them, what positions to put them in. And then all of a sudden we just took off. Like it was, it felt like overnight. We just became this different team. We had a different energy about us. Obviously Jalen's tweet got a lot of play, you know, the energy is about to shift and Jalen was right. Like it did. And I think as a coach, like I had never been a part of anything like that, where it seemed like almost two different seasons within one year. So I've just tried to carry that with me that like things can always change and you can get better and you can, you know, a group that's unfamiliar with each other can get that familiarity in the middle of the year and you can really take off. So, you know, we've tried to use that here in Utah as like a way to always maintain that mindset of like, we can get better and there's still hope to become this team that's much better than we are today. Like, don't let anybody tell you who you are or what you're supposed to be.
It just seemed like at some point, maybe it's mid-January, early February, all the lessons that you guys, or the things you guys were trying to instill in that team finally clicked. Like everybody seemed to finally get it and it all came together in the best possible way. What I will always remember is just, and Ime was the face of this, but kind of the public way with which, you know, the coaching staff, Ime, you know, kind of called guys out, called them to the carpet in a way. And I wasn't used to seeing that, you know, from Brad Stevens in previous years, who successfully had his way of doing things. But, you know, guys seem to, you know, they seem to respond to that. Did you get a feel for that? The guys were responding to kind of tough love that you guys were showing as a staff?
Yeah, I think the team responded so great to Ime and to the staff. Like they, number one, they knew that we and Ime were with them. Like they knew that Ime wanted the best for them and that Ime thought they were capable of so much more. Like his tough love never came across in a way that like was adversarial or like they thought that he didn't believe in them. He had such a great way about, you know, delivering his message, but they fed off of his toughness. Like we had tough guys on the team, obviously Smart and Jason and Jalen and Grant and that, like those guys are all tough in their own way. And they played in big games before, but Ime really created this collective toughness around the team. He was able to kind of channel this us versus everybody kind of mentality without saying it. And the guys responded really well to that. Like, I don't think, obviously in the moment, nobody likes to be called out, but in the end, they knew that he was right and that they all needed to give a little bit more and that they all needed to rely on each other a little bit more. And I mean, it's a credit to him and it's a credit to the guys. Like to be a great team, the team has to be willing to like give themselves to the group. They have to be willing to receive some of that tough love at times. And, you know, it's just as much a credit to those players as it is to Ime. But I think that the relationship between those two is ultimately what ended up, you know, turning our season.
I mentioned it was a sort of homecoming because you did spend your college years up at Williams. You know, you seem like a guy that knew pretty early on in your college career that the coaching track was one that you wanted to be on. Tell me a little bit about that. Like when did that kind of click with you? And how did you start to explore in your college years, ways to get in the game?
Yeah, it wasn't really until junior year of college. you know, I played for two different coaches at Williams. Dave Paulson coached me my first 2 years, and then Mike Maker came in between sophomore and junior year. And I developed such a close relationship with him, and he was really the one that kind of turned the coaching light on for me. You know, I was injured during my junior year for a period of time, and he would, you know, ask me to come up to the coach's office, and he would just kind of bounce things off of me. And what do you think about this? Do you think this is too much? Do you think the guys will like this? Like, you know, just kind of throwing all these different ideas at me. And those conversations like really got me excited about thinking about basketball in that way. Like when I was in college, for the most part, you know, you think of yourself as a player. Like you're not thinking about coaching really. You're just like, no, I'm a guy on the team. I'm a basketball player. And, you know, he always would encourage me and say like, wow, I think you have a good mind for this stuff. Like, you see the game in this way or that way. And he always was very like complimentary of me in those conversations. And I think a lot of that was him just trying to kind of help me see that part of myself pretty publicly through some of my friends that got interviewed when I got the job. Like I was never somebody that had a grand plan. I kind of just take life as it comes at me. And especially in college, like I showed up to school as a freshman and there are kids at Williams who they have like the next 20 years of their life planned out. And I'm not sure what I'm having for lunch. Like I just wasn't that type of like thinker then. And, you know, Coach Maker, he turned that light on for me. You know, him as well as like, Kirk Tong, who ended up being kind of my bridge to San Antonio, who was my mentor in college. Like those two people, along with my high school coach, like I think it's kind of the blend of those three that kind of got me thinking about coaching long term. Part of it is the tactical piece of like still thinking about winning and losing basketball games. Part of it is, you know, just still being a part of the team. Like being a part of a basketball team. Like when I think back to Williams, like I don't really miss playing in the games. Like I miss being on the team. I miss being with my teammates and hanging out with the guys and going from practice to the cafeteria to eat. Like I miss that part of it. And so coaching is a way to still be a part of the team. And then the other piece is the relationships, like being able to forge those relationships with the other coaches and then with the players. And I know how much those three coaches, you know, how much of an impact they have had on my life. And so as a coach, you try to, you know, put yourself in a position where you can help guys as players, but also be there for them in their life a little bit. You know, I have to take a little bit of a different tact with that than those three coaches did with me because of my age. Like I'm coaching mm-hmm. some guys who are older than me, so I can't pretend like I'm their mentor. It's more about being relatable, and we're going through similar things in life, and you're married and you've got young kids and you're trying to balance that with, you know, being in the NBA. So, you know, it all kind of happened for me at the right time in my life. Like it all kind of clicked at once. And those three relationships, Mike Maker, Kurt Tong, and my high school coach, Chris Brown, like those three people really turned that light on for me.
So was San Antonio the organization you were looking to connect with, or was it, I want to work in the NBA?
Yeah, I mean, really it started with, I wanted to just work in basketball. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the NBA to me was like a complete pipe dream. Like, who am I? You know what I mean? I'm a guy, I play at a D3 school in Northwest Massachusetts. Like, I'm not... I'm not an NBA guy, if that makes sense. And so I sent stuff to a lot of different colleges about potentially trying to be like a GA and no, I'll continue. I'll go to grad school, that type of thing. And, you know, it was 2010, the job market. It's one of those years where like the job market was crazy and it was tougher for people coming out of college to get a job. And so I applied to jobs all over the place, basketball and elsewhere. And I hadn't targeted San Antonio at all. I didn't even really know about the Spurs until 2 weeks before graduation. Kurt Tong, his wife called me and said, you know, Kurt is down watching tennis practice, which he liked to do. He'd go sit on the bench down there and watch tennis practice and be outside. And we had a lot of conversations watching tennis practice. And she called and said, he's down watching tennis practice. He wants to see you. So I went down and sat and said, what's going on, coach? And he said, you know, have you thought about what you're going to do after school? This is 2 weeks for graduation. yeah, I've been thinking about it a lot, actually. I've applied to a bunch of different spots, and I've actually gotten some traction with two jobs in particular that have nothing to do with basketball. And he said, well, I have a job that I think you should apply for. I said, what's that? He said, I think you should work for the San Antonio Spurs. And I said, well, what? That's a genius idea, but what makes you think that I even have a chance? And he said, I don't know if I've ever told you, but when I was the athletic director at Pomona in California, Greg Popovich was the head coach. We've been best friends for 20 years. And so like we ended up getting in this, not argument, but I kind of was like, hey man, like we've known each other for a couple of years now. I come to your house all the time. I'm on the basketball team. How in the world has this Greg Popovich, like this has never come up in conversation ever, that you're best friends with an NBA head coach and I'm a basketball player, you know, that whole thing. And he said, like, yeah, you know, I guess I never really thought about it. And so he put me in touch with the Spurs. I sent my resume. I got a phone call during finals from Pop that basically said, we'll be in touch about the interview process. You know, our season's still going on. We're not hiring interns right now. But when that comes up, like, we'll call you. I said, okay.
You got the phone call from Pop?
Yeah, I got a phone call from Pop during finals.
What was that like?
Very scary. Yeah. It was a number I didn't know. I have a bad habit of picking up. I did then. I don't do that now. So please don't call me. picking up numbers I didn't know. I just like, oh, cool. We'll see who this is. And it was this long phone number from Texas. And I picked it up and says, this is Will. I said, yeah. I said, this is Greg Popovich. And I like panicked. I was in the library, like writing my last paper of college, actually. And just ran out of the library and was like, oh, coach, sorry, you know, I'm in finals, da, da, da. And he said, you know, Kurt Tong speaks very highly of you, and you know, we got your resume. I just wanted you to know that we're not hiring at this moment, like it's going to be a couple months from now, so we'll be in touch. And so I said okay, but I again didn't really have any expectations of anything. And so a couple months go by, and you know, I'm staring down the barrel of like moving back to Virginia and like, you know, moving with my parents, which was an absolute no-go. And so I had kind of gone down the track with these other jobs. And so I ended up getting a call from the Spurs. I was a couple days away actually from accepting a job, writing press releases for a senator on Capitol Hill. I was an English major, and, you know, DC is 2 hours from where I grew up. And I got this call from the Spurs to do a phone interview. Did a phone interview, did a second phone interview, and then they flew me down to San Antonio to do like a face-to-face, and ended up getting offered a job as an intern. And 10 days later, you know, packed my car with everything I had and drove to Texas from Virginia. And it was a 1-year internship. So I didn't have expectations other than like, I'm going to go in and just try to work as hard as I can and see what happens. And maybe this gets me an opportunity to be a GA somewhere, or maybe it moves me to the next thing. Like, I don't know. And, you know, a 1-year internship turned into 11 years and met my wife in San Antonio. And, you know, I've said to a lot of people, like, I feel like I kind of grew up there. Like, I moved there 22 single as an intern and left 11 years later, married with a daughter and a second one on the way. And, you know, an assistant coach on Greg Popovich's bench. It's like, that's not at all what the plan was and not at all my expectations. So, yeah, really lucky. Really lucky.
When you think back to those 11 years, what's the story you like to tell the most? What's the memory that stands out the most from your time with the Spurs?
Probably there's so many of them. There's so many good memories. There's so many great people and the players. And obviously we won a lot, which is fun, but it's like fun, like all the stuff I remember is not the games, all the stuff in between. I guess one story you get a kick out of, though, is my first scouting report I ever did in San Antonio. Pop came in before the season. I was the video coordinator, and he told me, like, hey, you're going to do some scouts this year. You're going to have – I think I had one team. I think it was the Knicks. We play them twice. You know, they're in the East. So you have your team. You're going to do these two scouts. It'll be a good opportunity for you to talk in front of the team and, like, grow your voice and kind of do what the assistants do for two games. And, like, okay, great. Like, this is an opportunity to grow and learn. Awesome. So – you know, in classic fashion, like, I watched every Knicks game the whole year, like, preparing for the first time we played them. I knew more about the Knicks than any person on the planet. Like, I was so ready for this scout. Like, this is my big shining moment. And we actually played the night before. It was one of the road home back-to-backs. So the night before, we actually played at Utah, and we lost. Pop got tossed, and Kawhi got, like, tweaked at the end of the game. And so no one was in a very good mood the next day for this Knicks game. And Pop had a film he wanted to show the team. And so I'm the video coordinator, so I have to help him with that film. And so I went into his office and I said, okay, so just so I have the pregame timing right, you're going to show the film. And then I'm going to do personnel, because we haven't played the Knicks yet. So we got to talk about their personnel. And then I'm going to show my scout tape. And he goes, yep. I said, okay, great. So we go into the locker room. I have the film ready. He shows the film from the night before, and he gets very fired up about this film. And, you know, he's coaching the team hard. He's kind of going off. Okay, so he finishes. He's like, all right, New York. And so I walk to the front of the room. You know, again, I'm walking into the middle of the locker room. It's like Tim, Duncan, Tony, Manu, like the whole crew. Like, it's Pop. I'm scared to death. And so, like, the team's just gotten yelled at, so they're not in a great mood either. So I walk into the middle of the room, and I'm like, all right, guys, you know, we're playing the Knicks, and personnel. And we had Tim, Tony, and Manu were not playing that night, so I'll never forget saying the first matchup. I was like, Corey, you're going to guard Jose Calderon, like, and to see if he was going to talk about Calderon. And the second I said that, Pop yelled from the back of the room, we're not doing personnel. And I was like, oh, okay, okay. So I, like, you know, everybody kind of looks at me weird. So I, like, sit on the stool and pick up the remote. And I was like, okay, guys, so the scout, you know, the game starts in transition. And, like, I push play. And the second the clip starts, Pop yells in the back, we're not watching any more film. Just give them a scout. So I was like, oh, okay. We're going to switch 1 through 3 and, like, 4 and 5 will be in push. And, like, if Porzingis pops, like, you could, like, switch that maybe, or, you know, whatever. If he goes in the post, like, you could maybe double him, but just kind of, like, read what's going on offense. Like, just, you know, like, have good spacing and, like, drive and kick, and we'll just be able to get some good shots or something, you know. And then, like, Pop's like, bring it in. You know, I'm like, oh, my God, dude. Like, I prepped for months for this big thing, and I got just, like, kind of chopped. So 1, 2, 3 defense. Pop storms out. I'm the video guy, so I'm still in the locker room with the players. Got to take all the film down. Locker room is dead silent. Boris Diaw has this espresso machine in his locker that, like, starts buzzing because he's making his pregame espresso. And the team, I'm taking the film off the screen, and no, it's dead silent there. And Boris just goes, "You're a terrible coach," and the whole team starts dying laughing. Like, everybody's just cracking up. And I just turned, I was like, yeah, thanks, guys. That was really great. That went awesome. You know, like, it's just one of those moments for me where it's like, you just always have to remember, head coach, assistant coach, it's not about you, man. Like, it's about the team. It's about what the team needs in that moment. And, like, the fact that it went that terribly and somehow, like, there ended up being this huge laugh out of it, and the team thought it was funny, and, like, they all gave me crap for weeks after that. it was just one of those moments where, like, there's nothing to do but kind of laugh at yourself. you know, to think that I'm a head coach after that is kind of weird. I wouldn't say that if you asked me after that first scout, like, hey, you ever think you'll be a head coach? The answer is probably no. But that's always a funny story that the guys in San Antonio like to tell.
So maybe you already answered it with the idea that it's about the team. But, you know, you spent 11 years working for the Spurs, working under Popovich. what's probably the biggest lesson you take away that you take into coaching today? Like, where is that reflected most on you today?
Yeah, man, I think that the number one thing that I probably took is that you're coaching people, not players. Like, you are coaching players, but you cannot forget the human element. You can't forget that, like, being an NBA player is hard, and there's a lot of pressure that goes with it, and there's a lot of external responsibilities and noise, and some guys have families and some guys don't. And so, like, everybody's kind of living this different life experience, but they have similar professional experiences, if that makes sense. And I just thought that Pop always did such a good job with the players and the staff of, like, remembering that human element and, you know, not making anybody feel bad about having to miss something for basketball because of their family or because of their life. And I think that's, like, that's ultimately something that I'll always try to maintain focus on, that, you know, you have to check in with the guys. You have to make sure that they're okay. Because there's so much that goes on when they're not in this building with us. Like, we see them for a couple hours every day. But to get the best out of them as players, like, they need to know that there's real care and, like, real interest in who they are as people and their families, like, how their life's going outside of basketball. So, I'd definitely say that's, you know, the big, like, overarching thing that I've tried to take away from my time in San Antonio.
So this season in Utah, you guys get off to a ridiculously good start, you know, defying all expectations early on. And I remember having to call Danny Ainge about this, because there were all these Danny Ainge memes, though. Danny Ainge is upset that this team's starting off this way. And I knew it was an idiot phone call to make, but because I've known Danny for 20 years and I knew exactly what he was going to say, that no, I'm not upset about winning games. Like, I like, why are you asking me such a stupid question? But when you're there and you're part of it, like, when you are sitting atop the Western Conference standings in, like, late November, early December, what are you thinking, like, as this team gets off to the start that it did?
Yeah, we were all just having so much fun. Like, we have such a fun group of guys. We wanted to have a chip on our shoulder as a team, and we still want to. And it was just great for them to have that really early success, because it created so much buy-in to what we're doing. It created buy-in for them. It ended up giving them a different, like, sense of who they were, because, look, they all know what everybody said about us before the season. And, you know, I'm not naive to think that, oh man, yeah, we're going to be the number one team in the West because the first 3 weeks were the number one team in the West. But, you know, I, as a staff and as a team, it's like, look, you could say whatever you want about us, but we don't suck. So, like, whatever anybody thought before the year, like, is just not true. And we proved that very early. And I think it gave our guys, like, a level of confidence that, you know, they can deliver on the court, because there's always going to be different feelings and emotions the players feel that none of us ever feel. And that comes with being traded or the team changes. Like, you know, how do Jordan Clarkson and Mike Conley feel to start the year? There's this new coach that they don't know. The Donovan and Rudy have both been traded. Bojan's been traded. Like, they're sitting there going, wait a second, like, this is not what I thought this was going to be. And then you have guys that were traded here, and they're feeling a different way because they just got traded from where they were. And, you know, both of those teams, Cleveland and Minnesota, had good years last year. So those guys were a part of that going, wait a second, did I do something wrong? Like, I got traded to here. Like, and then everybody's saying, oh yeah, they've gotten traded here and this team's going to be bad. And so I think for them, it just gave the players, like, a real sense of, like, screw what everybody says. Like, we're pretty good. And, you know, we can play good basketball, and we're capable of beating anybody on any given night. And it just really gave our building, our team, like a great energy to start the year that we've been able to carry through. Because very quickly we were able to silence those narratives from the preseason of like, oh, this isn't a team. Like, they're just a bunch of, you know, spare parts all put together. Like, you know, that's cheap. Like, at least give these guys some credit. Like, they're all NBA players. They all have things they do well. Give us a chance to see if we can fit them together before you just, you know, say, oh, they're not going to be good. You know, we tried to frame before the season that a lot of those narratives that were said already aren't true before we've played a game. Like, they're inexperienced. Like, no, we're not. They're young. We're not that young. Like, it's just, you know, we were able to like quickly chip away at some of that. And then their play kind of immediately, at least in our own minds here in Utah, like it silenced those narratives of like, they're not good. And it's just given our team like a whole different energy that we've been able to carry through the rest of the year.
Is there still that energy, you know, even as you've picked up some losses? They've been competitive losses for sure. You've been in a lot of these games, but has it been difficult to maintain the energy you felt and saw from the team in the first month?
No, not outside of just regular energy drain that happens in an NBA season. Like, you get fatigue this time of year in general. You get, yeah, we lost a bunch of close games and we've had some injuries like any team does, but I think that's a big part of our job as a staff is to help them maintain perspective on like what's real and what's not, and that the margin between winning and losing is very, very thin, and it impacts how you feel way more than, you know, it should. No one wants to lose. Like, I'm not saying that they should be okay losing, but it's not the end of the world. Like, you lose on a Tyler Hero running three at the end of the game. It's like, did you play a terrible game, or the end didn't break our way? Like, there's always things you wish you did better. There's always things, you know, we try to help the team learn from and understand what we can do better every day, but you lose by 1 point, it doesn't mean you stink. And I think that's a big part of our job is to help them maintain the perspective of like, even when we went through those little pockets of losing, I felt like we still played more good basketball than bad basketball in those stretches. And so I think that's, you know, that's ultimately given us the opportunity to maintain, you know, that hopeful energy of like, no, man, we're good. Like, we're excited for these games and we're right in the thick of it. You know, we talked this morning as a team, like, again, don't listen to what anybody says. We're two games out of having home court advantage in the playoffs right now. Like, the West is that jammed up. So nobody's that much better than anybody right now. And so we're one of those teams right in the mix, and we just have to maintain some focus and some belief in that.
Two quick Boston questions before you go. Joe Mazzulla, your former colleague, he recently had to sit out two games because of an eye injury he got during one of these pickup games. And you're laughing because you know the direction I'm going. Well, as you well know, these pickup games that Joe plays in are fucking insane. Like, they are the physicality of these pickup games. I am surprised that the first injury we've heard come out of it is a cornea abrasion for the head coach. Like, when you heard that, were you surprised that's it? Like, they are so physical.
I'll say this. Number one, I was not surprised. Number two, I actually was able to name the person who abrased the cornea.
Sure.
Like, I know who did it. And just because I've been in that game. And lastly, that's not the first injury that's happened in that game. Ime just didn't play in those pregame pickup games last year. So there were plenty of injuries. There just wasn't one to the head coach. But when I did get the message that he was going to be out, I'm still on a text thread with a bunch of the guys from Boston. And I got this message that Joe got hurt in this pickup game and was probably going to be out. I didn't see it till after our game, which then the news had broke. You know, he had actually missed the game and Damon had coached. Mm-hmm. And I started laughing, and I actually called Joe, and he picked up and was like, the pickup games got the best of me. Like, it's just, we just had such a good laugh about it, because in some ways that game has been a ticking time bomb, and I know they're still playing and nobody's safe. Like, there could be another injury. But those games were so fun. Like, they gave us an opportunity as a staff to, like, really just compete and go at each other and let out some steam, and we get in huge arguments, and then the second it's over, it's over, and which is not always easy to do, but very funny.
The fact that they are played in front of anyone that wants to watch, like I first saw them this year and just kind of plopped myself down on the team bench and just watched, and Joe's like, you know, in the face of guys 6 inches taller than him. And it genuinely looks like there are times it looks like it's going to come to blows at some point. That, like, it genuinely looks like that.
I mean, there's always that possibility. I'm not going to say never. But yeah, we played them all the way through the finals last year, and it does not matter who's out there on the court. Like, the competitiveness from the whole group is going to be the same. Nobody's going to try to temper it down because Stan Van Gundy's courtside. Like, nope, Stan's going to witness how we play pickup. So I do miss playing in those games. A lot of great battles for sure. And I'm glad that they're still being played with the same intensity. Not that I'm shocked.
You got a bunch of, you know, former college players, and then, you know, Matt Reynolds out there running around throwing up jumpers.
Maddie can shoot, man. Don't leave Maddie open in the corner.
I'm not. Last thing for you. The famed cornet contest. I was told you were one of the first to, I don't know if notice it is the right way, but to, like, you know, give it a name. What, when you first saw Luke Kornet jumping from the paint, what was your reaction?
I don't know if I should get, I mean, I should not get any credit for the Eclipse closeout. Like, this is all Luke. There was a group of us that saw him do it, and I actually really, my first reaction was just pure enjoyment. I thought it was hilarious. And, you know, Luke is asked to help a lot and to stay off the ball, and we put him on some different matchups, and then he started doing this contest, like, as a way to stay in the play. And it started with, like, giving Luke a lot of crap about it. Like, dude, what are you doing? Like, why are you jumping 15 feet from the play? And, like, Matt would pull all the clips and we'd play them and we'd give Luke some crap. And then, you know, you can't deny the stats. Like, it's working, I guess. I mean, it's not working. And there was actually one time last year, I forget who we were playing, where he did it on a shooter in the corner in front of our bench, and it was the first time that I'd ever seen it, like, from the angle of the shooter. And I just remember, like, I thought to myself, like, oh my gosh, like, you really can't see the basket for a second. Like, it's the Eclipse. Like, it's taking away the view of the basket. And, you know, Luke has run with it. It's been his thing. He did text me this year that if I don't have Walker Kessler doing the Eclipse by the end of the year, that I'm a failure as a coach. So I do have a homework assignment from Luke on that one. But I was just a huge fan of it. Somehow it's turned into, like, I'm the first person that noticed it. That's not true. I was just a massive advocate of the closeout. I got to text Luke earlier this year when Rui Hachimura shot faked the Eclipse, which we may be onto something offensively. We're going to work on it before we play the Celtics this year. But Luke's such a great guy. So easy to root for. Does so much good stuff on the court. And that one just happened to be something that I was just one of the fans of.
The first ball fake where the defender's 15 feet away in NBA history. That's impressive. Will, I appreciate your time, man. You guys have been fun to watch all season long, you know, just exceeding all expectations. I appreciate you spending some time talking to me.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.